Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. Yes, we are solo podcasting. I have a cornucopia of topics we're going to bounce through today. Before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to tell all your friends to head on over to Word Up with Danny Katz podcast. And subscribe and join our awesome community, which is expanding by leaps and bounds in the best of ways. These are my notes for today's show. And let's start off with the world's weirdest week. Now, tying this into languaging, hyperbole. So the way the subconscious mind responds to hyperbole, as in worst, best, never, always, is it kicks the ego into action, and the ego starts looking for exceptions to our hyperbole. And so while I myself am prone to hyperbole and exaggeration, as you guys well know, never trust me when I cite any numbers, especially when I'm podcasting. It's so weird how consistently it happens, where I'll say something happened a dozen times, and then after it came out of my mouth, I'm like, no, it happened like once or twice, but it's already happened. So I just give you guys the caveat. I have historically been prone to exaggerating numbers and to hyperbole. However, hyperbole is not really an effective communication strategy because, as I just said, it kicks the ego into action. And instead of actually listening to us and tracking the conversation, the ego goes off into like a side room where it's just looking for ways to make the speaker wrong. That being said, it was a weird ass week. I'm recording this on Sunday, the 14th of July. And as I'm understanding on the flip side, the Mars-Uranus conjunction is in full effect. And so I'm not going to bore you with the litany of ridiculousness that happened last week. I'm only going to share what's pertinent to today's conversation, which is that on Tuesday night of last week, my computer broke, my beloved laptop. Now, when I say broke, the laptop didn't actually break. The laptop is fine. The laptop I got in 2018. And it is what folks at AppleCare like to call, I don't know if they like to call it geriatric. I don't even know what their term is. I just know that whenever I call AppleCare for help with my computer, they refer to it as old, out of date, vintage, like whatever their special AppleCare language is. And I find it thoroughly insulting because I feel like we have a pollution problem on our planet. Not a carbon problem. Carbon is actually life-giving. We are carbon-based matter. Carbon dioxide is what feeds all the trees and plants that give us oxygen in this like beautiful symbiotic give and take. That being said, we do have a pollution problem on this planet. And so for anyone watching with your eyes, don't worry, I'm getting it together. And so our wisest move is to not be wasteful, right? Not make $2,500 computers that need to be replaced every 5, 6, 7 years. Like, it's freaking offensive. You know, we're drilling into Africa. We're starting proxy wars in Africa so that our government can install their puppets there to give us rights to all their minerals so we can rape the planet to continue making all this extraneous tech nonsense to keep their enslavement machines running while thoroughly disrespecting Mother Earth. And so when I say my computer broke, my computer's just fine. But what happened was, the planned obsolescence overlords must have flipped a switch. And so all of a sudden, none of my browsers work. Brave didn't work. Firefox didn't work. Chrome didn't work. Safari didn't work. Spotify stopped working. Like, anything that was connected to the internet stopped working. Now, granted, I could have updated the operating system, but I'm not going to do that because I have Photoshop and I have a bunch of other programs that I've paid for. And I'm not on board, not just with like the monthly membership thing, which is another enslavement construct that props up the debt economy, because the way that works is these companies that keep us on their monthly membership titty use the projected numbers from keeping us in this, oh, these customers who we thoroughly disrespect and hate, they can be counted on to bring in this much money, and they use those projected numbers to get more loans, to jack up the system in all their gross ways. But it's also getting worse and worse. Like, I haven't read the new Photoshop user agreement because I'm done with Photoshop. Like, I bought it a bajillion years ago. I have it on my older computers. I'm not going to be trapped into buying it again. And as I understand it, and you know, I might not be completely accurate with this, but as I understand it from some news, you know, pundit coverage that I've seen and heard, they're trying to pull something that, like, whatever's created in their new user agreement is their intellectual property, which is what Remarkable pulled and why I'm not down with Remarkable. So Remarkable, for those who don't know, it's this tablet. It's beautiful. It came out of, I think, Denmark, like one of those Scandinavian countries that's, like, you know, super tits at design. And it's not backlit. And it's this tablet that you can draw on. It'll convert your handwritten writing to text. It's great for note taking. But they sent out a new user agreement in, I think it was 2022. And I'm one of those, I mean, I want to say one of those people. It's definitely, to use the phrase I'm one of those people is to put myself in an identity construct. So I'm going to eschew that urge. I'm going to clear, cancel, delete. I read user agreements. So when I read their new user agreement, it stated that anything created on my Remarkable tablet that I paid full price for, it was a few hundred dollars, is their intellectual property. And I'm like, the audacity. Who the hell do these people think they are? And my plan at the time, because I'd been doing some cool doodles on it, was to do all of my text and illustrations for my Pop Propaganda Illustrated Guide, which is on sale now on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, all the slavey ones, also available through me for those who aren't down with corporate enslavement. Anyway, so my plan was to create that book on my Remarkable. And after I read that user agreement, I'm like, I'm not using this super expensive machine again. And it feels like a total Trojan horse bait and switch, kind of like Facebook, kind of like Instagram, kind of like this whole internet, which, P.S., I've been railing against. I mean, I was railing against computers since, I'm trying to think when I got kicked out. I got kicked out of my junior high, eighth grade, because they put me in a computer class. And I said, I refuse. I refuse to take computers. They will be the downfall of this civilization and I want nothing to do with them. And, like, I railed in such a way that the teacher got super panty bunch butt hurt. And I didn't get kicked out of the school, but I was asked not to return. I was told I was not gonna be welcome back. I could finish out the year. And then instead of computer class, they made me a TA for the kindergartners, which was awesome when I got chicken pox and gave the entire kindergarten at Countryside Prep chicken pox. But I digress. Not really. Is there such thing as a digression? I mean, I feel like all rivers lead to the ocean. All of my tangents lead to a point at some point. And yes, I might have had some caffeine today. It does a body good. So I'm not down with a Photoshop monthly membership or the Photoshop new user agreement. Plus, I already bought Photoshop. Plus, I have a bunch of other things on my computer and I don't want the forced, like, I'm not down with the forced OS update scam. It's such a scam. Anyway, so all of this is to say I couldn't get on the internet. I couldn't do the work that I needed to do because I was preparing for a couple podcasts and needed access to the internet. And I knew it was coming. So it was like, all right, it's time to go get a new computer. So I go to the Apple store. This was my first time at this outdoor industrial shopping complex. And I saw a sign that said code of conduct, just like applying to the mall. And the very first thing on the list was no hoodies. And I thought, that's so freaking weird. Like, why are hoodies not allowed? Especially in a state where people are still wearing diapers and muzzles on their faces. And it's like, okay, I can go into a store with a full-fledged muzzle on my face, like a bank robber, but I can't wear a hoodie? All right, whatever. So I go into the store, and you know how it is, like they have their greeter, and their greeter checks me and tells me to go wait in a certain place. And then this other man comes up to me and he says, "Okay, I'm gonna need you to wait over at that table." And then he points to a woman and he says, "She's gonna help you," but she was in the middle of helping another customer. So I'm looking at this woman, and she works at the store, and she's wearing the standard issue Apple worker t-shirt with booty shorts, like yoga shorts that some people wear to work out in. For me, it's like what I would wear to go to sleep in, or what I would wear, as a base layer underneath my clothes. But now all of a sudden, because clown world has gotten so weird and the whole demoralization campaign is in complete full effect, now people feel like these are cool to wear out in public. But this woman was wearing booty shorts to work. And when I say booty shorts, I mean I could see the under crack of her butt. Not like the middle crack, but like where it kind of there's that like kind of lumpy peach-like part, and then it like curves in and comes down into the thigh. Like all of that was exposed. It was all the way up to her hip and her panty line. And I'm thinking, like, how is this appropriate to wear to work? And I don't feel comfortable shopping from someone who's dressed like a stripper. I don't have any ones on me. Like, I didn't come prepared to be dealing with a stripper when I'm about to throw down $2,500 on a computer machine. So I say to the man, "You know what? I'm really not comfortable buying a $2,500 computer from someone who's wearing booty shorts. Can you hook me up with a salesperson who's fully dressed?" And he got so pissed. And he goes, "She's just wearing exercise shorts." And I said, "They're pretty short, and she's wearing her booty shorts to work." And he goes, "Ma'am, I'm going to appreciate it if you refrain from commenting on my employees' bodies." And I said, "I'm not making any comments on her body. I'm commenting on the clothes she is slash isn't wearing." And then I said to myself, like, "Shut up, Danny. You don't want to get kicked out of this store. This is the only Apple store in the state." Here's the thing. And I spoke about this a lot after Me Too, and it was actually my first experience of losing friends because I was sharing unpopular perspectives on the social engineering that it is my job to track. I am a journalist. I am tracking how culture is being engineered and herded towards various cliffs and ovens and unpleasant places. So I've been tracking the demoralization of women for quite a while, and how when women are showing so much skin that I could see I don't even know what to call it. I'm sure there's an official name, but like the part of the ass that moves into the leg at work, even if it's not at work, let's say it's at the strip club, let's say it's at the farmer's market. That is sexual signaling. That's straight up biology. They want us to trust the science, right? The cult of scientism. But there are aspects of science that are legitimately true. And something that is legitimately true, it's that we all have biological imperatives. We're wired to breed. So when women are walking around and showing side boob or showing ass rump, that is absolutely going to rile up the male sexual response. And to pretend that it's not because of some twisted narrative that it's female empowerment to wear whatever we want is delusional, disrespectful, and unsafe. And I'm going to break down why. So, look, yes, we are all reality creators to an extent, but there are certain laws of nature that are immutable, right? So if I go out into the sun, blaring hot sun, naked, wearing no clothes, no sunscreen, and when I say sunscreen, I mean mineral sunscreen, I mean titanium dioxide, not that chemical nonsense. And I say this, I can go in the sun however I want to. that doesn't mean I'm not going to get a sunburn or freckles, because the sun does what it does, regardless of like my opinion on the matter, right? So if I decide, well, I'm going to go out showing half my tits and half my ass because that's women's empowerment and I can wear whatever I want. Okay, I can do that. But I'm delusional if I think there aren't going to be consequences to my actions. The last time I spoke about this, which was around the Me Too time, people kept trying to like project this rape apologist label on me. I don't even know what a rape apologist is. It's some like one of those like made up Tavistock phrases to just shut down any like critical thinking or critical pushback against people acting like freaking idiots. So no, it's never okay to lay hands on someone else's body, but it is delusional to think that if I walk outside showing half my tits and half my ass, that that is not going to rile up the male sexual response. And I feel like that's disrespectful to my men, to my brothers, to the fathers out there. You know, I have a lot of male friends who are very straight with me. You know, there's something in my frequency. A lot of it has to do with the gene keys, the 27th gene key, which for me sits in the sphere of my purpose in that whole genetic profiling system. Now, I could go deeper into it if you are inspired to have a gene keys reading, because as a gene keys guide, I love giving gene keys readings and shorthand for the sake of today's podcast. The sphere of the purpose sits at the very bottom of the hologenetic profile. And I always consider it like the sacrum, right? And so what I say to people is like, if your sacrum has ever been out or injured, you know that like, well, then your neck will go out, a rib will go out, a shoulder will go out, and you can go to the chiropractor as much as you want and have them all pop back in. But until you get your sacrum back into place, it's all gonna pop out again, right? So that's how I see the purpose sphere functioning in everyone's hologenetic profile. In my personal hologenetic profile sits, in the purpose sphere sits the gene key 27, which moves from the shadow of selfishness to the gift of altruism to the city of selflessness. It makes perfect sense if you are subscribing to my podcast, right? I'm pretty much wired for service. Part of the 27th gene key is that people will tell us stuff that they don't, and when I say us, people who are carrying the 27th gene key, people who are programmed by a strong, prominent 27th gene key, if that's you, then you understand people will tell other people holding that 27th gene key the types of things that they don't tell anyone else, right? I hear it all the time. I've never told anyone this. I've never said that out loud. I never put that together before, right? So as someone who holds that key, who has that kind of dynamic with people, a lot of my male friends will share their experience of dudeness in more intimate ways. And I remember in Los Angeles, I had a friend who was like a very, very high profile movie producer, who was married and devoted to his wife and a good man. Like he wasn't a scumbag. He didn't cheat. And I don't mean to pass judgment on people who cheat. Other people's relationship dynamics and agreements are really none of my business. But what I'm saying is this was a good man with integrity. Anyway, he would tell me about being in meetings with young actresses and how when they would show up showing so much skin, it was very hard for him to focus on the meeting because of all this sexual signaling, right? And so I feel like it's really disrespectful to the men on planet Earth to be riling up that sexual response so flagrantly and recklessly because of how you're dressed at work, which PS is totally freaking inappropriate. Like we don't need to see that much leg and ass when you're selling someone an iPhone. Like it's just so out of line. And I feel like this is where we've gone off the rails as a culture, where it's like time and place, set and setting, context. Like do you have to be dressed Like you're going to a club 24 freaking 7? You know, I saw this on the news. Like I took a baseball bat to my television in my 20s after a particularly intense and mortifying way too many mushrooms taken mushroom trip in Joshua Tree when I was rock climbing with some friends. And it was so mortifying to me, the stuff that was coming out of my mouth when I was in that state, that I came home, I borrowed my neighbor's baseball bat, and I took it right through my TV, and I never went back, never watched television again. So, and I'd also pulled out of, well, basically that was it. So I was getting my news from the radio and I wasn't really tracking it. And I remember being at a restaurant, it was like sometime in the 2010s, maybe 2017. And there was a television in the restaurant, and where I was positioned, I could see it. And it was a news, like a nightly news program. And I was completely shocked to see the anchor dressed like she was going to the Roxbury. And I'm like, when did that happen? And I can be slow to pick up on these things because I don't tend to track pop culture. But it's been really disappointing for me to see news anchors move from like Diane Sawyer, buttoned up, professional, to like showing so much skin. And I, look, it's not like I want to police how people dress, but it's just being realistic with the effects sexual signaling is having on other people. And I go back to when Me Too first erupted and this, you know, nonsense fourth wave neo-feminism that is just such a gross Tavistock divide and conquer op. But we live in a world of equal and opposite forces, right? That is part of the nature of this third dimensional realm, equals and opposites. So if we have so many loud hysterical voices on the planet saying the masculine is out of balance, then the feminine needs to really take a look at itself to see where it is also out of balance because we're equal and opposite. So the masculine is out of balance, so too is the feminine. It can't not be. That's one of those immutable laws of this realm. And so it was at that time that I started to like do my best to bring attention to like, hey, women, I'm not saying don't be free and like put on a burqa, but I'm saying like be aware of the consequences of you showing so much skin and just check in with yourself of like, is this appropriate? Is this kind? Is this respectful? Is this the best way for me to, you know, make a grocery run? Do I need to be wearing a bikini to do that? And how is that going to affect all the men who I'm passing by? You know, and I know there are women who feed off of that, and that's a different conversation. I'm not even going to go there. But I do think it's something that women would be wise to look at, right? When we're resting so much of our value on our sexual attraction and needing to like flaunt that and rile that up all the time. But again, that's not the conversation. But it's just being realistic about our actions have effects, our actions have consequences. I remember I was working on a writing project for a couple years back in LA, and my writing partner was healthy red-blooded male. And very respectful, right? Like had done quite a lot of work. He wasn't a dangerous guy who was gonna get handsy with women against their will. But he lived in Venice, and I remember we took a walk and we kind of parked ourselves on one of those bridges that go over the canal. Maybe canals would be more accurate. And this girl walked by. She could not have been older than like 14 or 15, right? But she had matured, she had reached puberty, and she was wearing those booty shorts, right? Very similar to the booty shorts that the Apple saleswoman chose to wear to work. So weird to me. And I watched my writing partner lock in on this 14-year-old's ass, and just like, it's like his head and his eyes were kind of, you know, magnetically linked as she passed. And It was freaking disturbing. It wasn't disturbing. Like, I don't blame him. He was being a total normal man. But this girl was young. This was a young teenage girl. And for me, my mind just went to like, where is her mother? And why would her mother let her out of the house like that? Because not every man was going to be as respectful and self-responsible and show as much restraint as my writing partner was. And I mean, I was looking at her ass. It's shocking to see, like, oh my God, that's like a lot of skin in the middle of the day when I'm just in public with people. That's dangerous, right? The male sexual drive is so freaking powerful. And as I said before, like, it's not okay for a man to ever force that upon anyone. But I think it's smart for us to understand how powerful that is and how much willpower and energy it takes for a man to pull that in when it's being riled up. And so, that being the case, like, I just don't think it's very respectful. Like, if we're trying to bring the masculine and feminine back into balance, if we have the intention, if you know what, I'm gonna pause myself there because I just watched this amazing interview with Dave Rodriguez and Robert Tennyson Stevens. And Robert Tennyson Stevens, author of Conscious Languaging, whose work I wasn't tapping into when he was alive after I first met him, because I thought what we're doing is too similar and I don't want to be disrespectful and I don't want to be out of integrity, so I'm just going to stay in my lane. Now that he's passed, I'm excited and I'm like, okay, it feels like now's the time where I could dive back in. So in this interview with Dave Rodriguez, Robert Tennyson Stevenson said intention, the way he broke it down was intention, Tennyson, and it was like, wow, I hadn't even thought about that, right? I don't deal with phonetics as much in the languaging paradigm that I'm working with, quantum languaging. So Robert Tennyson Stevens advised the upgrade into outcomes instead of intentions, the outcomes. So I love that. And I'm using this as an opportunity to make the upgrade myself. So if the outcome, the ideal outcome that we are holding, that we're choosing to live into, is a world of gender equality, a world wherein the masculine and feminine are working together in harmony, in cooperative harmony, to lift one another up, then to me, it only makes sense to be respectful and to not go riling up that male sexual response willy-nilly, like for no reason, just because it's like a power trip or something, or because we like the attention. Like, I just feel like it's really irresponsible and it's really not very compassionate. And in this case at Apple, I thought it was completely inappropriate. And I literally just wanted to shove dollar bills into her waistband. I mean, I would never do that, but I just thought it was super inappropriate. And I've had instances with AppleCare, and I'm not proud of this, but there are times where, in fits of frustration, I mean, I feel like tech issues are frustrating, right? I don't think I'm the only one who can sometimes become dysregulated when I'm on a deadline and all of a sudden my computer isn't working and I'm dealing with AppleCare and going through all that nonsense. And there have been times where a curse word has left my mouth, not in the way of like F you, but in the way of like, you know, this is some bullshit. And I've been told by AppleCare, I'm gonna need you to not use those words and to keep it professional, or I'm gonna hang up. So it's like, okay, AppleCare needs me to keep it professional by not saying like, you know, the S word or the F word or damn or whatnot, but you have no issues with your salespeople dressing like strippers when they're on the sales room floor representing Apple. Got it. The other thing that I want us to keep in mind, just to help bring it out to the macro, is I want us to bring us back to Yuri Bezmenov's like really, really relevant work on ideological subversion. And he was trying to warn us in the 80s, and for those who don't know, though I'm guessing if you're listening to my show, most of you do know, this is a former KGB agent who defected to the United States and did a lot of talks and interviews to help wake us up to the fact that we were being taken over from the inside. And he broke down the four stages of ideological subversion, which I've gone over in numerous shows. I teach about in my Pop Propaganda digital media literacy course for teens and grownups. But the very first step in ideological subversion is demoralization. What is demoralization? Demoralization is lowering the moral and ethical standards of a culture, and they do it super slowly, and they target the youth first. You know, look at the Academy Awards shows from the 80s. The starlets are not all like, look at my hot, sexy body all the time. No, they're like high necks and just like elegant. Like, what happened to elegance? What happened to dignity? What happened to class, right? It's all just like all tits, all ass, all skin all the time. And okay, that's fine if you're at the club, you're at the gym. I'm not really a fan of it, but I really don't want to see it on the floor of the Apple store where they're expecting me to throw down $2,500 while I'm buying my computer from a goddamn stripper. So, so I buy the new computer, I bring it home, I go through the delightful motions of migrating all my stuff, figuring out which apps no longer work with the new operating system, which were a lot. So that was on a Wednesday. And then Friday, I was podcasting with Emily, and the new computer broke in the middle of the podcast. My 2-day-old computer broke in the middle of the podcast. So, and this one, it actually broke. It wasn't like an operating system thing. It was like the computer itself broke. So cut to, okay, go cancel a bunch of other stuff, drive another hour back to Albuquerque to return the computer. When I bought the new computer, and it was just like, I just need a computer, you know, like it was just like, give me what you got. When I got the computer home and I opened it for the first time, it just popped on, right? So I went through all the setup and it was never off. It wasn't until it broke on Friday that, and I did call AppleCare before I went and returned it, that I went through trying to fix it. And I noticed that the on button, and this was so creepy because they didn't tell me and I didn't even notice it until 2 days after I bought it. That's where they're collecting the fingerprint. Now, of course, I didn't, you know, when I'm going through the setup process and it's asking me if I want to set that piece up, I'm like, hell no, hell no. But it annoyed me that it was there and that they've not conflated it, but they've like merged it with the on button. So there's no way to not touch it. So when I figured it out, I just covered it up with tape while I was going through, you know, the attempt to restart it. So when I brought the computer back, I said, do you have any options that don't have that touch ID? And he says, no, but he goes, but you know, if you don't choose that option when you're setting it up, it's never going to collect that information from you. And even if it did, it would only be within your own unique Apple computer. Like that information would never be shared on any networks or with any outside sources. And I was just like biting my tongue, like, don't start anything, Danny. Don't get into the biometric surveillance state conversation with the Apple care, you know, the Apple salesperson. Don't do it. Don't go there. But in my mind, I was laughing my ass off. Like, how naive and stupid do they think we are? Like Apple's not in bed with the intelligence agencies with the global agenda? Are you kidding me? It reminded me of the time when I haven't flown since 2019 because TSA is so freaking offensive to me. It reminded me of one time that I opted out of the body scanner. So I was waiting for the female assist and one of the other TSA guys asked me like, well, why are you opting out? And I said, because those things give off radiation, those things cause cancer. And it was right after there'd just been some big expose on like, you know, in the mainstream on how dangerous those things were. And he's like, oh yeah, well the old ones were, but these are the safe ones. These ones are safe now. And I said, who told you that? And I think he said it was like the manufacturers, the TSA guy. And I just like, I didn't get into it with him. I just paused and just like let him hear himself. Like, it's like the makers of Impossible Burger saying this is totally safe for you to eat after their version A of Impossible Burger caused God knows how many, you know, health problems to people. It's like, well, these are the people who lied to you about the first version being safe, and now they're giving you another version, and now you're going to believe them when they tell you it's safe. Like, I didn't say any of this, but this is what was going through my mind. And this is exactly what I was thinking when the sales guy is telling me, oh no, you could totally put your finger on the biometric digital fingerprint scanner that Apple has taken it upon themselves to make the power button on the laptop. But trust me, they're not collecting your data. And even if they were collecting your data, trust me, they're keeping it safe. Jesus Christ. It's like trusting Anthony Fauci with my health. It's so absurd. Anyway, I have two layers of tape over the power button, and I think it is absolutely unconscionable and offensive to my core that Apple had the nerve to make their digital biometric scanning device the power button. It's like a new low for Apple. Just when I think they couldn't go lower, they like plummet another 1,000 feet down. So I had the pleasure of being a guest on the Alpha Vedic podcast last week with Mike Winner and Dr. Bear Lando. And we had such a fun time. It was such a great podcast. It was live, so we had all the energy coming in through the chat. I wasn't watching the chat, but I could feel it. And it was like a really good, high energy, fun podcast. And when I'm a podcast guest, like I don't have, like I'll go where the podcast hosts want to take us, right? Like I'm intrigued to see where they're going to take me, and I'm happy to roll with the flow. I wasn't expecting to be asked about the shills in the health freedom movement and in the generalized like rebel freedom stander conversation. And of course, Emily and I talk about this pretty much all the time on our Words podcast. So I have no problem naming names and calling out the people who are bad actors, controlled opposition, sharing 99% truth and sullying that 99% truth with their 1% of propaganda, manipulation, BS, what have you. But they were kind of guiding the conversation more towards our peers. And that's fine, because I think there are a lot of people in this space that it's helpful for them to be called out. And I'm using that phrase very deliberately versus like my usual quantum languaging upgrade of called in, right? When we're calling one another in on languaging patterns that aren't serving us, right? Because when we're calling someone in, we're calling them into their higher self, into our community, into their full potential, instead of shoving them in the role of outcast. But calling out shills and bad actors and pawns is helpful for people to understand A, who to trust, but also like how to discern truth from propaganda, how to start to recognize the markers. So I do think it's a very important conversation. Obviously, it's why I created my Pop Propaganda Digital Media Literacy course. I just wanted to go a little bit deeper into the shill pawn conversation because I don't think it's black and white. I think it's multi-layered and complex. And I wanna break it down. I did a show with John Kerwin, and what he was really excited to talk about was how the term shill is being really overused in the truther community, and people are slapping it, you know, projecting it onto people who aren't necessarily being shills. And what I learned from that conversation, which I actually didn't know, is that I had been using the word shill wrong, because shill implies that he or she who is shilling knows that they are shilling. And so it taught me, which I so appreciate, thank you, John Kerwin, to differentiate shills from pawns. Now, I have no problem using shilling as a verb, and it's probably the kinder, more compassionate way to even have the conversation, because nouns and labels and identity constructs create more separation consciousness, etc., etc. So it's obviously more helpful in high vibe to reference human beings who are shilling than to slap them with the labels of shills. But at the same time, like, we're in a war. This is World War III, and journalism, real journalism, can be combative, right? Because we're combating injustice and untruth. So sometimes I'll give myself a little bit of a pass there. I always say this is my first apocalypse. I'm figuring it out as I go along. But we looked it up on the show, and shilling or being a shill definitely implies having conscious knowledge of misleading people or manipulating people. And I think a lot of people who have been accused of being shills are simply pawns, right? They're being manipulated and they don't know they're being manipulated. And this can happen in a bunch of different ways, right? Of course, there's standard issue MK Ultra, right? Where like people might have alters in their minds, right? There might be like a symbol or a song or a keyword that has people like checking out of their conscious mind. And then, thereby being like more easily used to like put information through them. And I'm not going to get into that whole conversation. Other ways people could be used as pawns without knowing it would be if they have handlers, right? So let's say if I had a podcast producer, which would be awesome. I love that idea. Let's say my podcast producer was my handler, or I had a team that was handling me. That could show up as like them booking someone on my show who was going to spread disinformation. That could look like them dissuading me from having someone on my show who was not controllable. Someone like, oh, I don't know, me. Or Emily, you know, or other people in the space who have integrity, right? It could be having people in our lives who are handlers. Take RFK's wife. She certainly seems to be his handler, right? He said on the record that his wife won't let him go on Alex Jones. We all know the story of them having a party and his wife demanding that everyone who showed up be vaccinated, which I don't know how to make heads or tails of that, given his whole public facing shtick on that, the injection conversation, but whatever. Handlers can just be friends in our lives. They could be colleagues, right? We could also be put in positions of shilling by interesting business opportunities, right? Look at the wellness company. And for anyone who doesn't know what's going on there, I recommend checking out Amazing Polly's, I think it was like, she did maybe like 3 to 5 videos on how the wellness company is, they sponsor most of the shows in like the health freedom space. I don't want to say most, but most of the big ones, right? And so Amazing Polly's work is pointing to the fact that they're actually intelligence operation, right? So the wellness company, these are the ones who are advertising, who are giving money to these content creators. So if the wellness company puts out a blast of like, hey, you know, anyone who does any shows on, sense making this week, we're doing like a $50 bonus, right? Anyone who wants to have this doctor on their shows this week, we're booking them, right? So that could be a gentle, not so gentle way of handling these content creators without the content creators really knowing about it. I'll give you some examples of some ways that that people have attempted to handle me. And I did speak about this on the Alpha Vedic content podcast, but when I had Andrew Kaufman on my podcast, and he's come on twice, I got calls from people in the health freedom space, famous people in the health freedom space, telling me that I was endangering my own reputation by associating with Andrew Kaufman and entertaining his no virus conversation. And I knew exactly what was happening and was like, don't ever tell me what I can or cannot say. Like, that's not gonna work with me, right? But other people who might be like, oh, well, I want to have a good reputation in this space. I don't want to ruffle any feathers. That could be a very gentle, easy way to have them shy away from the no virus conversation. I also got a call from someone who was high up at Children's Health Defense, who was telling me that they really wanted to work with me and really wanted me to help them with their movement, but I would just need to shut up about the virus, no virus conversation. I was like, I don't want anything to do with your movement. Fuck off. Friends, you know, like it can slip in the most insidious and nuanced of ways. And there are plenty of overt ways, but all of this is to say, and I think I just got, I just went pretty deep into a realm. I'm gonna pull us back from shilling and pawning. Emily and I mean, if you guys watch our Words podcast, we talk about this a lot of like, we're scorched earth. The scorched earth people are dangerous, right? You'll notice the scorched earth content creators, our numbers are significantly lower than the non-scorched earth people. Why? Because we're not controllable. Because we're gonna say whatever we wanna say, and we're gonna take our explorations and our research as far as we wanna take it. We're not gonna stop where it gets uncomfortable, where we might expose too much, right? That's not gonna happen. In some ways, that can be challenging in terms of social pressure. It's not challenging for me because I don't really care. I'm not a people pleaser, right? So it's not, I'm not pushing any edges in being scorched earth. I'm simply just being me. I think where it's really, really easy for me to be scorched earth is that I don't have kids. And this was the piece that I felt was missing a little bit from the shill conversation that I shared with Baron Mike. And we were talking about so many things, so it's like not, like it just wasn't appropriate for that conversation. But pause for a sip. Over the past few years, it's been shocking, and I mean shocking, to see my colleagues who I thought we were on the same page, those of us who were together leading the charge for truth, freedom, and justice. It's been shocking to see how many of those people have flipped, have turned. And some of them might be shills, and some of them might be pawns. I don't know. In a lot of the cases, I don't know. In some of the cases, I suspect. It's been a weird rug pull. And this is, you know, a conversation that a lot of us have had behind the scenes, because there was the first like great friend, family, colleague loss that happened in 2020. And that was heartbreaking and paradigm shattering enough in and of itself. The second wave, which was kind of a bigger, like messed with my mind in a bigger way, was seeing people who I trusted and leaned into for standing for truth, see them turn into pawns and shills. And it just added this other layer of muddiness, right? And those people are still perceived to be freedom standers, right? A lot of people are still giving these leaders, I'm using quote marks with my fingers, their allegiance. And it's also interesting because I feel like what we've been going through this past 4 years is an evolve or perish situation. So one of the upsides that I see to this is it's like really accelerating the learning curve, right? So we're all learning so much at a really accelerated rate. So when I study the people who I didn't think it was possible for them to flip, what do they have in common? Across the board, they're parents. And that lens, it's like that's a legit vulnerability, because I know plenty of people who would die on the sword of truth, no problem. But when their family is being threatened, that's a whole different ballgame. And so what I'm realizing, you know, my own learning curve is that it's easier for me personally to go scorched earth because I don't have kids. And I have compassion for the people who I know, who have turned in ways that are disappointing to me, but I also have compassion because I don't know what it feels like to have your children threatened, your children's lives threatened, and that's got to be pretty freaking terrifying. And so I've learned, right, and it's taken me a minute or so to learn it, but like to not pass judgment because I really don't know the full story or what they're going through. I had an example in mind. Look at Sidney Powell, right? Like Sidney Powell was leading the charge about Hillary's laptops and Hillary's emails, right? And she was very public with what was going on, and that's why Assange is in prison, and going hard like in supporting Trump. And then last year she totally flipped, and there was this big public declaration of how like the 2020 election was totally on the up and up, and any allegations of election fraud are fake news. And I was like, what, Sydney? Like, what happened? And this is part of the learning curve, realizing, like, oh, they must have threatened her kids, right? Watching Alex Jones, like, A, that fake Sandy Hook trial, and then that ridiculous performative nonsense when he had Brett Weinstein on InfoWars. And it was just so clear, like, either they're threatening his kids or he's being paid a lot of money. And so this is the thing with like shilling and pawning and that whole conversation is like, yeah, I have no respect for the people who sold out, who have a price on the truth. I don't respect that on any level, but I don't know that that's what's happening. And there's an instance, and this is something that happened recently, where someone who was a friend of mine all of a sudden flipped. And I'm like, what? What the hell is going on here? And I was talking to a friend of mine who's a mystic, you know, lots of psychic abilities. And when I ran it by her, she's like, I see a gun to his head very clearly, and I see that his family's being threatened, right? So none of this is to give shilling or pawning a pass, right? Especially like when the stakes are as high as they are right now. But it's easy for me. It's easier for me to put my own life on the line because I don't have people depending upon me for their survival. And I just want to put that out in the public record because Bear Mike and I had that conversation. And I think it's so easy for us to pass judgment on people who have flipped. And I think that's easy to do when we ourselves haven't been put in the position of having our families threatened. It doesn't make it okay. It doesn't make it something that I personally respect, but I just want to acknowledge that this is a very complicated game that's unfolding right now, and I don't know the pressure these people are under. And so, you know, it's why in certain instances, like I just keep my mouth shut out of respect for the friendships that I have. Because I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and I don't know how freaking terrifying it is to have someone threaten the lives of your kids. And that's it. That's all I wanted to say on that piece is like it's just not black and white that these people are full-on scumbags. That does it for the first half of today's meandering podcast, as you're inspired to pick up the second half, which is infinitely more focused, and it's where we go into wrong use of will languaging, and we really get granular with some concrete examples as to how it's peppering people's lexicon and how it's functioning to shut down the listeners, then I recommend heading over to my Locals and or my Patreon communities. It's where for as little as $5 a month, you get to support me, one of your very favorite content creators, and you also get to tap in to all these wonderful extra bonus options that I have elucidated. So you can find second half of today's podcast and all of my second half podcasts at dannycats.locals.com. as well as on patreon.com/DannyKatz. I'm also inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at DannyKatz.com. It's the best way to ensure that we can stay in touch. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I'll see you on the flip side, superstars. Have a rockin' day.